Are you ready, Jeff?
Aye, aye, John.
I can't hear you.
Aye, aye, John.
Oh, who records a podcast about RPGs?
System Mastery.
Curmudgeonly angry and stupid are these.
System Mastery.
If beating a dead horse be something you wish.
System Mastery.
Then gather your dice and roll a d6.
System Mastery.
System Mastery! System Mastery! System Mastery! System Mastery!
That was just stupid. Welcome to the Afterthought Podcast, the companion piece podcast, where once a week or so, we get together and talk about whatever the hell we want. It's really every 2 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. And I say once a week or so every time, don't I?
Every goddamn time.
It's fun. It's more fun to say it that way and mess people up to think this is a weekly podcast.
Yeah, you're just missing the other one. Yeah. Don't worry.
It's for super Patreon subscribers.
Once you hit the certain level, you'll get the other afterthought.
If you give us $3,000 an episode, we make more of these just for you.
Just for you.
Yeah, specifically targeted at you individually.
Yeah, so far we got three of them. You don't know, though.
That's not true. No one is giving us $9,000 a month.
You don't know that. No one knows that.
I know that. That's why I keep shilling.
Good job.
Anyway, the Afterthought Podcast is the one where we talk about something related to the episode we most recently covered over on System Mastery, and then we get together and answer a bunch of your great questions.
Great.
Oh, and we have so many this week. There are so many great questions coming through.
So many.
Just so many. So, what did we review last week, John? What was the System Mastery du jour?
It was the Great War of Magellan.
Ah, that's right. Guam, as we've been calling it.
Yeah. Guam.
The Guam. God, what can we possibly extrapolate from that thing as a...
Well, one of the little bits that got brought up when we were talking about this, and we don't need to go in at length, but I thought it was just interesting to give it a nod, was the idea of when someone writes a rule for the writer instead of for the person playing.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. The idea that the writer, it basically comes down to playtesting or a lack thereof.
Well, yeah, and I think that's what you get with
you fall in
someone.
Love.
Yeah, that's what you get when you let your heart win. No, it's what happens when you are writing your first RPG. It's after you've played a whole bunch and you're like, oh man, I've got this pile of house rules and this is how we've always played in my game. And then you're like, oh, I'm going to sit down and write an RPG. And you just include every single house rule. Or the other side of it is you just assume a lot of people will be playing the same way you do. So you'll write about like, oh, and this is how this works, obviously, and then never explain it, even though it's a rule only you and your group use.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing I've encountered. The thing about this book I really wanted to talk about was the need of any player. Like, I don't think anyone's ever really played this game, right? But if you did, you'd have to constantly refer to this book.
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't just play this game. You couldn't sit down and be like, all right, we all kind of basically understand the rules. Like, if I want to sit down and play old Dungeons & Dragons, I don't really even need the books anymore. Like, I kind of know the Thakos of various classes. I know what bonuses an elf gets. I'm all set. I can kind of play the game. And if I do need to check the book, it's just occasionally and for a few things. But this book had a major design flaw to it that I felt was really important to discuss, and we didn't actually get to on the show. We talked about the special die.
Well, yeah. I mean, we did discuss it, but the big thing with the special die was if you're playing a game, usually in an RPG, you have a lot of numbers to keep track of, mm-hmm. but they stay static for generally a period of time.
Yeah, you crit on a 20. Everyone knows natural 20s are super important.
And even with something as ridiculous and weird as the old, like, here's your Thaco, and here's your, like, petrify save, and here's your wand save, and so on,
mm-hmm.
at least you had, for your level, it was the same.
Yeah.
So you only had to, like, memorize one new number per level.
Yeah, but then you look at this game, and it's like, okay, what am I doing? Am I firefighting? On a 7, I crit at firefighting. On a 14, I super fail at firefighting. Let's move over and look at diplomacy. Well, on a 5, I crit at diplomacy, but on a 14, I sort of 15, I super fail at diplomacy.
Yeah, it gives you a weird range, and some will be the same. Like, there are a couple skills, given that there are 113 and only 20 numbers to pick from. Obviously, a few are going to overlap. But even then, you go, all right, well, I know that I've got one skill that lets me be super awesome on a 12 and one that lets me suck on a 14. But if I look at it, those are almost the same as the ones over here. So you'd have to make a little chart for yourself. But the other problem is, of course, like I was saying before, this is one of those rules where it feels like the person who wrote this definitely was using the special die as a thing he did in his game.
Yeah.
But he doesn't explain, if I roll a super awesome crit on my special die
and fail at the actual task,
and fail, what does that mean? Or vice versa, if I succeed but roll the super awful crit on the special die.
Like, you get rid of some fire, but the rest of the fire gets way bigger, I guess, although it doesn't say that.
No, it that's gives you no parameters for how to use this.
There are games that have a range of failures and successes, and that's actually a really good idea, to have a game where it's like, oh, you succeeded a little bit. You succeeded, but there was a complication. You failed, but an extra thing happened that can help you in the future. That's kind of how Fate works, for example. This game doesn't actually take that extra step. Of a book that's very, very verbose, it doesn't take that extra step that would have been required to say, hey, if someone crits but succeeds or crits but fails, then do this thing and add this extra wrinkle or complication.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that. So anyway, it should. And yeah, definitely one of the things that we really took away from reading Great War of Magellan was playtesting.
Yeah,
playtest.
You can't just use the same group that you've been playing a game with and go, hey guys, we've been playing a game for 10 years using the same house rules. Let me know how you go with playing this game with the exact same house rules.
Yeah.
You have to get some people who've never looked at your game.
Yeah, send that game to strangers. Don't send it to us, though. I don't want it. I don't want your new
game. I've already gotten that once.
Yeah. I don't have time to play your new game. I'm really sorry.
I have already looked at someone's. I've just written an RPG, please take a look at it, and gone, oh, I'm sorry. I don't want to talk about this.
We've talked about that, how back in the very beginning when we were first getting started, someone gave us a spiral-bound RPG they had just written that they wanted us to review.
Yeah.
And we were like, no, we can't review your game. It would be we can't do that to you.
No, it is a literal heartbreaker. Yeah. Reading this makes me sad.
Yeah. Oh, it's D&D, but you can play as dog people.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, here you go, buddy. System Mastery is going to put it on the fridge. But not our cool fridge on the website where you can download stuff. Our actual fridge.
Yeah, it's going on top of the actual fridge where it will collect dust.
Just sit up there and collect dust and unwanted brochures for pizza.
There is no unwanted brochure for pizza. I would like all of the brochures for pizza.
That's not true, because Pizza Hut exists and is atrocious.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yet I'll still eat one of their pizzas.
Ugh.
It's the stuffed crust.
Oh, okay. It's just so you can eat around the edge and eat cheese bread,
basically. Oh, yeah. It's basically give me cheesy bread and some shitty pizza inside of it.
Nice. All right. Fair enough. All right. You want to answer a couple of questions, John? We got a lot.
We have so many questions. Oh, my God, you guys. You gave us a lot of questions.
Thank you. Thank you for all these great questions.
I love questions.
It's the best. It's our favorite time of the week is to do this show. I love this way more than System Mastery because we get to answer the stupid questions. And
I don't have to read a book.
Make up the awesome intro and we don't have to read a book. I am reading a book right now because we're getting ready for next week, but
yeah,
nothing for this week. Ah,
intermission.
All right. Let's get started with a question from Alien Rope Burn, who sent me a question over something awful, which is why it took me 2 weeks to answer it.
Yep, because you're dumb and you don't check things.
Gotta use the regular channels. Wait, who are you calling dumb? Me or Alien?
You.
Me?
You are dumb.
That's not. If
I'm calling someone dumb and you're in the room, you can probably assume it's me calling you dumb.
That's hurtful, but okay. I'm accepting it. All right. But that's just because something awful isn't one of my usual channels of getting questions, and I forgot it was there. Anyway. Listening to you guys talk about Bronchosaurus Rex, one thing I think got lost among Confederate Apologia was that it was D20, even though it didn't really fit the game's genre or setting. And he's right, it was one of those D20 adaptation games from during the big licensing boom. Of course, that's because it came out of 2002, when everything from swashbuckling to pet monsters got a D20 treatment. So here's the question. Are there any third-party D20 games that you think actually use the system effectively, or is it essentially a dead end of RPG design? Okay, well, Bronchosaurus Rex was our third delving into the field of D20 licensing. Because we did, way back in the early days, we did D20 Modern.
Yeah.
And then we also covered, I guess it's our fourth, isn't it? Because we did EverQuest.
Yep.
And we did Bronchosaurus Rex and one more. It was the superhero one, Aberrant.
Yep.
So we've gone through a bunch of these, and if any of them really use the license in an interesting or fun way,
D20 Modern is the closest one, because at least it still had that, like, fantasy classes kind of D&D feel that you always get when you get a D20 game. Now, you can have a game that uses D20s. You can have a game that has a lot of the trappings of a D20 game. But when you're using that actual D20, like, system, then it brings to mind certain things. And if your game has nothing to do with that, it feels weird. It would be like using the White Wolf mechanics to just play a regular D&D game.
That would actually be kind of interesting.
It would be real weird.
Yeah, it doesn't feel right. Because, especially for me in particular, because the only White Wolf game I've ever actually sat down and played is Exalted. So for me, when I hear that, I'm like, all right, my fighter's going to roll 30 dice to try and hit that orc. And I'm like, okay, but I'm only playing some dude. I'm not playing as, like, the crazed godhood example of Shining Justice.
Well, the problem is all the White Wolf games basically make you into some weird deity. Because even as a vampire, which when you measure the splat books against each other, vampire's pretty low on the totem pole against, say, a werewolf or a mage.
Mm-hmm.
And even then you're like, oh, what does a vampire do? Oh, he moves at super speed and throws a car through your face. Oh, okay.
Yeah, fair enough. So, yeah, there's definitely something to be said for games matching the aesthetic of the rules that were written for them, and it's very rare to encounter a D20 game from that licensing era boom that does it right. I think EverQuest did fine, but that's because EverQuest is basically just D&D.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, I liked the EverQuest D20 adaptation better than I liked the EverQuest MMO.
Well, yeah. Well, that's just because mostly D&D 3rd Edition was an MMO game for babies.
Fair enough. I also think that it was better as... The EverQuest D20 adaptation is better at being D&D than the D&D book is, because the spells in it are just incremental power grades pulled straight from the video game. So there's nothing breakable. There's no like, oh, I'll turn this guy into this thing, and then that thing has the ability to grant wishes, and I'll use that wish to turn this thing into this thing, which has the ability to turn this thing into this thing, and what do you know, I blew up the moon.
Well, you also don't have, here's a big fat spell list, and one guy gets access to everything. It's,
yeah.
What do you have? Oh, well, if you're this type of spellcaster, you have this spell list. That's it. If you're this type, you get that. It would be like if you picked, I'm an illusionist. Okay, you're a gnome illusionist. This is your spell list. It doesn't matter that you are a gnome illusionist. This is what you get. You can't pick other weird shit to make your illusions better.
Yeah, you just get these illusions and they are balanced against the other classes because we did that. So I thought that was kind of cool. In terms of genres that I feel like might work in D20, I feel like a cowboy game could probably be done pretty well in D20.
Yeah, some kind of cowboy game, maybe with dinosaurs. I mean, I'm just throwing this out there.
That's not a cowboy game. That is a Confederacy game.
Well, it's a space Confederacy game, and it's weird.
I feel like
you could do, not so much Deadlands. I wouldn't say Deadlands would work with it, but...
Aces and Eights.
Yeah.
Something like that. Some game, I feel like the genre is close enough, because you've got kind of noble, swashbuckly types. They just use six guns instead of swords. You could make it work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just Bronchosaurus Rex just really did... I mean, they weren't even trying to stick the landing.
No. Well, it's especially with that whole, like, your class does nothing.
Yeah. If they were trying to stick the landing in terms of trying to get that cross to stay upright in the yard, they sure got that done.
Woo!
All right, moving on. Next question. Here's another question from Alien Roper. Based on your Let's Plays, because we actually did some Let's Plays and played Dr. Magnet Hands, and we are working on more, don't worry. What do you think is the minimum element necessary for an RPG? I ask this because listening to Dr. Magnet Hands actually makes me think more of card-matching party games like Apples to Apples, The Big Idea, or Cards Against Humanity than an RPG, though it definitely has echoes of one. What to you is the smallest possible RPG?
Well, the reason I would put Dr. Magnet Hands into being more of an RPG than just a party game is you are still taking on the role of something.
Yeah,
you take one of those random cards, and you have to be that thing.
Yeah, so when I was acting like a little micro pig that was also quite rich, I actually did have to act like that. I don't have to act like one of my Cards Against Humanity cards, so I feel like just the simple act of saying that you are playing a role is all you need for a role-playing game.
Well, yeah, and it's the use of imagination for what's going on there, because you could say, oh, well, you know, I'm going to play Dr. Magnet Hands and literally just go, all right, so you go to the moon, and you have to fight a giant yacht that comes with its own iceberg. Okay, how do you beat it? And someone slaps down, okay, I will play a laser pig, and that beats it. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, because you actually have to kind of correlate and make the explanation in the jump. So there's a lot of creativity and thought. I actually went and played Dr. Maddenhands the other day. I taught some people who were not role-playing game people the other day.
Yeah, a bunch of burners.
Yeah, Burning Man people. I actually had three or four friends who were all heavy Burning Man friends, and I taught them how to play this game. And what I found was that they don't have even the basic role-playing game like need to stick to the rules. One of them immediately said, I start eating when we started the game. He was playing as a guy named Lazar, because that was one of the powers someone had written down. He was like, when he first started the game, I was like, all right, you guys are all in your secret lair. And he goes, I start eating. And I was like, oh, okay, what are you eating? He said, I don't know, whatever I can get my hands on. One of my cards says I can poop twice as much poop as regular poop, so I need to eat a lot of food so I have lots of poop ready to go. And I was like, oh, that's clever. Normally, like when I was playing this game, I wouldn't worry about that. When I needed to play the poop twice as much poop card, I would just describe that in the past I always eat a lot, so I'd be ready to go. But this guy was like, this card says I gotta eat to make poop. Okay, I'll play that. So it was cool to see him get creative and someone else.
Oh, yeah. Plan ahead because it's thinking you need to do that in order to use it.
It was really cool, and it really got him into the feel of a role-playing game. I thought it was cool to get these folks who, I mean, these are the sort of people who would only know D&D. If you were like role-playing game, they'd be like, oh, do you mean like Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah.
So it is definitely a role-playing game to me. And of course, I mean, I've told this story before, but I used to play basic D&D when I was backpacking as a Boy Scout without any of the books or the dice. We used the millisecond hand on a stopwatch for dice. And the DM kept the HP totals of monsters written on his arm with a pen. That's a very minimal amount of game you require. Four people walking in a line on a hill.
Yep.
So I think the requirements are actually really low.
I like to imagine that when you see those shots from Lord of the Rings where they're all walking along mountain ranges and doing that, all of the characters are also doing that.
Oh, yeah. They're playing D20 Modern.
Yeah.
They're all like, imagine a world where everyone's got, like, fanciful engined vehicles that can roll across the ground. Where you don't have to sleep on a route. It's one thing I always think about when I watch Lord of the Rings is, God, I would get sick of doing that quest after, like, a day because I have to sleep on the ground. I'd be like, no, fuck this. Fuck it. Mordor can fucking win. I don't care. I'm not sleeping on the ground anymore. I hate rocks.
I mean, obviously, I would get sick of that within, like, 2 hours. I'd be like, I'm tired. My back hurts. Can we stop? I'm thirsty. Yeah.
I can walk all day. I can't sleep on the floor. That's my cutoff. That's why I can't get the ring to Mordor. I'd be like, look, how many Howard Johnsons are there between here and Mordor? Because if it's enough that I can get from one to the next, we're fine. I'm going to eat some of their weird orange ice cream that tastes like soap. I'm going to go to bed. We're good. Everything's fine.
No, see, for me, it'd be like, I'm fine. I can sleep on the ground. I'll just use a fat hobbit as a pillow and everything's fine.
I can't do it. All right, so there you go. Thank you very much, Alien Ropeburn. Let's move on to a question from Dr. Mantis Toboggan.
Ah, good.
Mm-hmm. Mantis Toboggan asks us, now that vampires and werewolves have been covered, if you had to choose a monster, I think we may have done this question in the past, but let's just knock it
something
off real
like
fast.
Yeah.
If you had to choose a monster to reimagine for a supernatural team romance novel in the vein of the Twilight series, what monster would you choose? Let's just see if we get something different.
Yeah, no, it's the same. It's the same thing I think I said last time we got a question like this, and it's mummies. It's always mummies for me.
Mummies. The thing is, I've read a vampire or a mummy romance novel because that's one of Anne Rice's books.
Oh, yeah. Well, I also saw an episode of Buffy where it was basically a mummy romance.
Yeah, because Anne Rice was always like, all right, we'll take these vampires and we'll just turn them into sex goblins with carnival penises. We're good. We're doing this. But then she also did a mummy book where the mummy was just a sexy dude walking around going like, I am thousands of years old. Please suckle at my penis.
Oh, yeah. He's like, ah, my dick is as dry as the Sahara.
Yeah. But he didn't have the wrappings on or anything. He was just a sexy dude.
Yeah, he did not have the wrappings. No. He was not like, a rap.
I'm Kirk Cameron, and I'd here to say.
I like to rap in a Christian way.
Yeah, none of that. He didn't do that. I'm going to go with Kaiju.
Oh, good.
Kaiju romance. Yeah. And it's going to be, the story is that every person at the local high school is one of those weirdos from like late Japanese Godzilla movies that can summon the monster.
Oh, yeah, those kids who are like, hey, you need to come.
Gamera is friend to children.
Yeah.
And you get in Gamera shows. It'll just be a whole high school full of those kids grown up, embarrassed about wearing short pants, but they still and they all still have a friggin' kaiju tagging along and they hate it. They're like, ah, Mothma. You're not making me look cool, Mothma.
I mean, Mothma.
Granted, the Mothma summoner is two twin tiny women, if I remember, that live in a clamshell or something.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever. But I'm gonna go with kaiju. That's my answer. Moving on. Next question comes to us from one Egregious Offenses, and he says, Jeff and John, some episodes ago, you guys discussed things in game design that aggravate you. Well, you do that almost every week, but you know what I mean. Yeah, that's very to say, right? Yeah, you mean every week? Every week for 2 years?
That's going to narrow it down. Thanks.
Anyway, asking as a guy who enjoys writing my own material for games, when it comes to fictional settings, what are your pet peeves or common complaints? I know that... he included an image, which I can't show you, but that's fine.
Man.
So, when it comes to setting design, what do you hate?
It's always, don't make it so that gypsies are weird and magical. Don't make Native Americans weird and magical.
Okay, so
don't make black people weird and magical.
Yeah, all right. So racism is the first one we can go with.
Yes.
Because that's a common thing. I mean, that's
and also, if there's an apocalypse, don't make it so that Japan immediately reverts to samurais. Just don't do that
shit. Yeah, the Knights Templar come crawling out of England the moment everything shuts down.
Yeah, it's...
These organizations that have been gone for 2,000 years just pop back up. They're like, hey, we've been waiting for our chance.
Yeah, no. The fact that an apocalypse happened does not mean that some country immediately reverts to one story you have heard about them.
Oh, man. Did the apocalypse happen? I'm King Arthur. Someone pass me that chainmail.
I'm King Arthur. Yeah. Please, Merlin.
So there you go. New stuff instead of just retelling old stories in the future, and racism is definitely a big one because, yeah, you get every time you read it. I mean, Ravenloft is a sweet kick-ass setting, right?
Yeah,
it's got like cool haunting things and demiplanes of dread and mist, and you can't get from one to the other except where the DM's crazy whims, and there's liches running super towers. There's also just gypsies, just straight up gypsies. The Vistani are just gypsies.
Yep, and it's always the problem with that being that they're like, oh yeah, and here they are, and even when you try to do the, like, nice racism, they're like, oh, but they're super cool and magical, and they have a great tradition, and they take care of family.
They're so well-spoken and noble.
Yeah. But even then, you still always get that, oh, but they do love stealing babies. And you're like, oh, fuck you. Get fucked.
Yeah, that just reminds me of the Gypsy Bard Kit from the second edition Bard's Handbook, which had that thing about how gypsies don't have a code of ownership, and anything that's left on the ground is just free reign for them to take.
Yeah, thanks.
I was like, that is racist. That's what I'm reading right now.
Oh, yeah. It's so, just every time you get that weird, noble, savage crap, just don't.
Make sure, if you want to put in parallels of existing racial dynamics or cultural dynamics from history, change them a lot. Really, really spread that paint around so it doesn't look the same anymore.
Oh, yeah.
That's our big advice there. So, good. Good question. And then he has a second follow-up question here, and it begins with, this is primarily aimed at Jeff. See, I told you people hadn't forgotten that joke. This is primarily aimed at Jeff. Here's a serious question for you. I'm in my first year of living off campus, and while I've been squeaking by when it comes to food, I've always wanted to try actually cooking, not just being creative with frozen vegetables, chicken breasts, and minute rice. So when did you teach yourself to cook, and how did you find the time? Do you have any tips for aspiring competent cooks?
All right, well, I'll take this one.
Yeah, by all means. Okay, so what you're going to want to do is buy a gross of frozen French bread pizzas.
Yeah, look, what you need is that Stouffer's French bread. Now, you're going to put that in the oven for about 15 minutes. Mwah! Perfecto. Al dente.
All right, I learned to cook at an early age, actually. My mom's an excellent cook, and I pretty much just studied at her feet. Most of my cooking these days, when I come up with something new, the deal, or you know what, I'm going to say the best advice is to have a competent, full-built spice rack. Because once you have that, you can make anything. You can make Jamaican food, Persian food. You need that garlic powder, turmeric. You need the cayenne.
True. You do need to invest in that. Because anytime I've looked at, like, oh, what if I want to make whatever? And it's always like, you need this spice and that and this and that. And you're like, oh, fuck. Okay, yeah. Great.
Then you go to the store and it's like $8. And you're like, you know what else is $8? Two frozen pizzas.
Yeah. So. It's true. That is 100% accurate. I'm like, oh, let's see. I can get some cumin or a whole meal. Fuck you.
Except that cumin you can use like 1,000 times.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Getting a full spice rack is really the first step you want to go to towards making yourself a decent chef. The other thing I like to do when I'm practicing on one food or another is I will go into phases of either regional where I do, like 2 years ago, I had a year of Persian cooking where I taught myself to make tadig and kofta and kubide and all these other things that were fun. I just did it by Googling what they were and then kind of messing with them. But it was all Persian. I was just doing Persian and cucumbers and all the ingredients that make up good Persian food. Or sometimes I pick a protein. Like right now I'm in a pork phase. I've been in a pork phase for 30 goddamn years.
Pork phase is my favorite new RPG.
Yeah. Come on with us, folks, on the adventure of pork. Welcome to pork phase. I've been cooking a lot with tenderloins for the past year or so. The more you spend time working with that protein, the more you learn what it's what you can do with it, what you can't do with it, how to cut it.
I have been working with some protein for most of my life, and I know all about how to handle it, what you can get out of it.
Anyway, there's another question coming up that's about me cooking, so I'll throw out a new pork recipe when we get to that one.
Yeah.
So there you go. Really, it's all about spices and being experimental. One of the things that infuriates people who cook with me is that I do not use measuring cups. I just throw shit in a bowl and get it right. Trust the food. Garlic is delicious. Cayenne is delicious. All these spices are... paprika is awesome. If you trust them, then you end up with bold flavors that people are going to like. So, all right, moving on. Since I have been listening to this podcast, this is from Grayston O'Brady, by the way. Grayston O'Brady.
Oh, Grayston O'Brady.
I think that might be a real name. Since I have been playing to this since I'm listening to this podcast, my friends and I have made an effort to try some games that have been reviewed on the cast. We've played the good, like Dr. Madden Hands and Everyone is John. The bad, namely Maid, and he says he blames Devlin, so I assume that this is one of Devlin the Turbo Farmer's friends. And we'll soon try to play the ugly. You recently mentioned Traveler, a game of which I am trying to get a group of friends to play. Do you have any opinions or experiences with this RPG?
Okay, so Traveler is... I mean, it's famously one of those games where you can kill your character in character creation.
Yes, you can.
But in addition to that, it is also a game that is far more punishing and asks a lot more of your DM than a lot of other games.
That is true.
Because it doesn't come with a setting, really. It's just, you're in space, go.
I've read that book like twice, and all I can tell is that you play as like the owner of a space RV. You're like the retired owner of a space RV.
Oh yeah, it's you and your other retirees flaunting around doing weird stuff in space.
Yeah, in a spaceship that is described as like a little recreational vehicle for explorers. So you basically have the ship from Spaceballs, and you're driving around with a bunch of old people, and you're just like, yeah, we all had careers already. We had two or three careers each. We're just, this is the end of our days, and we're going to go to randomized planets with, maybe they have breathable oxygen. Who knows?
Oh, yeah, and that's the other thing, is the planets and plot and everything, because there is no setting, you have to decide what people are going to do.
Yeah.
You have to decide what the planets are like, and if you try to randomly generate it, you get things like, what is this? It's a planet with... three times as many people as the planet Earth, and there is no vegetation or water, and you're like, but how, what?
Yeah.
How are there, okay, whatever.
Don't worry about it, it's a hex code we have for planet generation.
It's made out of sandstone, and it has a heavy religious bent.
I'm sure that someone's going to send us an email about how the deep meta story of Traveler is just something that escaped us entirely, which is possible. Let's just be clear here. All we've ever done is read the little pocket guide version of Traveler.
Oh, I've looked at some other Traveler books, and it really is just, here's more ways you can build ships
and
ways to make planets.
Here's how you can... It's got a super granular equipment system where you have to know the weight in grams of everything your character is wearing and equipping.
Oh, yeah. I remember one of the people at the game store we go to was running a Traveler game, and they were outfitting the ship. And the guy basically had a spreadsheet for, like, okay, here's the amount of cargo we can hold, because this is our cargo space and how much that space weighs, and because our propulsion system is like this, we can hold this, we go this fast with this many people, it takes a crew between this and this, it costs us this monthly, and you're like, okay, wow,
yeah,
all right.
I'm out, because I'm like, what's your spaceship do? Well, it gets us to the next adventure.
Oh, yeah, because the other problem with Traveler was, if you get a rad spaceship, you most likely can't use it, because it'll be like, what did you get? Oh, we got this sweet destroyer. Okay. In order to fly that sweet destroyer, you need between 24 and 50 crewmen. And you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. I don't know. It never really seems like it was our ball of wax. But maybe one of these days we'll review it and we'll know more.
Maybe.
Yeah. So there you go. Sorry, don't have any really good experiences for you. He also says, P.S. We are playing all these games 100% seriously.
Good.
Good.
That's As you should.
Yeah, when you play Everyone is John, you need to take that shit serious. That's why whenever I play Everyone is John, I take one three-point difficulty goal, and it's go to work and do my job.
Good.
All right. Next question comes to us from Knuckle Sandwich.
Good. Knuckle Sandwich.
Knuckle Sandwich is a lurker on the Something Awfuls.
Oh, he lurks.
Lurks, just like you most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you lurker.
I don't like posting. I don't like anyone. I don't like food anymore.
Hey, guys. First off, wanted to say your podcasts are great. I've been working my way up from System Mastery number one, and we'll be caught up in a week.
Woo!
Nice. Good. Second, and the reason I'm calling you two bastards... Oh, he's calling us bastards, by the way. I think that was the title of the email. is that I was listening to the Panty Explosion episode while driving home on the highway tonight, and during your example of rivals describing failures, I was laughing so hard the tears in my eyes ready to be blind for a good 15 seconds or so, and a passenger in the car next to me had a what-the-fuck look on her face, wondering why I was having what looked like a psychotic breakdown. Good work.
Yeah.
You remember that at all about Panty Explosion, how the successes are described by your best friend?
Oh, yeah.
And so we were like, oh, she falls down and then shits a line of plums so solid that it blasts her into the stratosphere.
Yes.
And everyone can see her butt. I would love to play that game just for that.
Just the ability to describe what other people are doing. Don't give your players that ability. Oh. That's just bad.
That's what's going to happen. Some questions for Afterthought. You have the opportunity to send a mental image back in time to Gary Gygax in the 70s, which will influence the development of this newfangled role-playing game he is inventing. What image do you send?
It's my dick.
God damn. For someone who has not read these questions, you were ready on the ball with that.
Oh, yeah, no. The second it was send a mental image back in time, I'm like, oh, I am getting dick pics to Gary Gygax back in time. Don't you worry about that.
Well, I guess I might as well send him the starfish then.
What, like Starro?
No, I mean like my butthole. I'm sorry, I didn't make
my butthole is like Starro.
My butthole is like Starro. In that once it gets on your face, you do whatever I want.
Also, it controls the Justice League.
Also, it killed Buwana Beast.
My butt, Starro.
Oh, that's fun. All right, so thing is, I kind of like what Gary did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's an image I could send him that would actually influence anything.
Maybe just a piece of paper that explains how studded leather armor wasn't real. So he would know. Because he didn't know, and he saw pictures of it, and he extrapolated from the pictures. And all that the studs in that armor was doing was holding the layers of the armor together. It wasn't actually... The studs don't do anything armory.
Yeah.
So maybe just send him that so he'd know, and he would know not to put that in his game. And maybe also... I think there's at least one or two other types of armor that are debatable about whether or not they actually existed. People say splint mail, although that might just be what samurai wore.
Yeah.
Who knows? Well. You know what? I don't really want to change what he was doing, because... As clunky and weird as first edition D&D is, it's really important.
Yeah, I would show him basically just like a picture of a rad looking demon.
Yeah.
But just off to the side is my nuts.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And I'd send him a picture of the best dick. Mine. All right, so there you go. What is your opinion of putting blue cheese on a really good steak?
I mean, why not? Go for it. I don't care.
I don't care for... I like my strong cheeses... separated and off the plate. I feel the same way about blue cheese that I do about gorgonzola, which is I like the cheese. I would prefer to just eat it. I for example, a gorgonzola and pear pizza, I'm like, why did you do that? Why did you even put pear on this? I can't taste it. It just tastes like gorgonzola. So I'm not a huge fan.
I'm fine with it because anything that masks the flavor of steak, which is shit, unless you burn it into jerky.
Yeah,
if you give me a steak that's basically like Cheezel T. Weenus jerky penis.
Fair enough.
That I'm fine with.
Right. I keep forgetting how much you like to make love to shoes with your mouth.
Yeah.
Where I like a steak to have an interior that is as pink as a woman's rose.
Yeah. You like it when the chef has shown a picture of fire to the steak.
Not that much. I like my steak to have a nice pink center. I don't like that whole, oh, just make my steak a warm piece of raw meat. I'm like,
it
why?
Should be able to walk out here.
We spent millennia inventing fire. Let's use it to cook our steak. Not this raw steak with a sprinkle of salt on it. Bullshit. I don't need any tartar.
Oh, no. You give me a well-done steak with some blue cheese on it. There you go. I'm happy. I'm a happy guy.
Let me ask, do you feel negative about the addition of ketchup to that?
Oh, no. That would be great. In fact, if we could just get the blue cheese off there, get a slab of Kraft singles on top there. Ooh, baby. Now you got a meal going.
I just wanted to get you
Before we get to the cooking question for you, that's my recipe. You get a good steak.
Burnt
you
to crisp.
Burn it the fuck out, and you get it as well done as you can. You put a Kraft single on top of there, and you just drown that bitch in ketchup.
I like this. This is my plan for how to make a steak for you. Cook a steak till it's molten hot and crispy. Like, literally, make a meatball out of it. Then, take a whole block of Velveeta Kraft cheese and place the steak on top of it and let it melt its way down and in there with its residual heat.
Yeah.
Consume.
Exactly.
Okay, great. So that's why your opinion on blue cheese on a steak is invalid.
Yes.
Good
because
to know.
I am a garbage human that just eats things out of your trash.
Ugh. All right, if Kevin Symbieta told the Aristocrats joke, which Riff's characters would be involved, and what would be some of the horrible things they'd do to each other?
Aaron Tarn.
Aaron Tarn and Winston Thorpe, because they're the only two that are kind of upper crusty.
Always. Yeah, they're always doing it in weird places. They just rift into England where a fairy pisses on their face, and then they jerk each other off onto the living tree of life, which then drops them into the Africa, and then the four horsemen do a gangbang.
Yeah, just gangbang all over them, and their giant dog animal monster mounts are just doing an exact same gangbang behind them.
Oh, yeah.
And then they teleport to the Cybernites, and Lord Croak is there, and he pulls out his dick, and it's all gnarled like a longshoreman's cyber dick he's got going on. And then
Yeah,
perfect. And then he kicks them so hard that they land in Chi-Town, and Carl Prosek is there, and he's like, I would like to shit on you.
And he's got some spider skull fuck bots. And
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, and then they have to deal with the Coalition fuck machine. By the way, that's my new t-shirt right there. The Coalition fuck machine.
That was my nickname in high school, oddly enough.
If anything, I think that's the name of this episode, by the way. The Coalition fuck machine.
Well, sir, it's been great.
That's all the time we have for today. We're not going to say anything funnier.
Ooh, I'm getting the light. It's time to go.
All right. Thank you so much, Knuckle Sandwich. All right. Oh, this is a long one. Here we go. To the ghost of Gary Gygax and his co-hosts, John and Jeff. Oh, I forgot that we often say that the ghost of Gary Gygax is here. I'm going to try and read this quickly. It's a big one. Describe to me the ways that the average day of life would be dramatic or drastically different if the world ran on D20 granularity. Would this be a great movie or a great campaign setting? Please do this on a local and global scale. Oh, that's easy enough. All right, first of all, we've talked about this before because of Haven, City of Violence, in which the D20 crit chance was an automatic success on some ludicrous difficulties, like, you know, rewrite the laws of physics.
Oh, yeah.
You only have to roll a 20. So if you have that rule, that just means that
every disease is cured.
Every disease is cured.
Because every 20 days, someone trying to cure cancer does so.
Yes. And every time anyone tries an impossible thing, it just happens after about 20 days on average.
Oh, yeah.
And since there are a lot of people making these D20 rolls, everything is cured or fixed or seduced all the time.
All the time.
It's just the probability of impossible things happening shoots through the roof.
Yeah. Now, the problem is, it also means everyone who exists probably is terrible at everything except for one or two.
Yeah.
Because you only have so many points to spend in any given skill, and when you don't have any points in them, you just suck at it.
Yeah, if you think about the list of things in a modern D20 style game that would be granular skills, like driving, for example, like I am capable of driving, working in an office, making a podcast, sound editing. I know a little bit about geology. I know a little bit about space. I know a little bit about shark reproduction. These are all things I would have had to spend points and skills on, and I would have run out of skill points, and I wouldn't be able to drive.
Oh, yeah. So it'd be one of those things where most people would be going, oh, well, I went to the college for being able to be, like, a computer programmer. I've got 10 points in computer programming, and then, like, 2 in drive so I can get to and from work. And then after that, I'm just constantly shitting myself because I didn't put any points in using the toilet.
Did I remember to spend 5 silver pieces on a bucket? No? Okay, then I am indeed just shitting down my legs where I walk.
But it's okay because that's the world we live in.
Everyone's doing this between rounds of curing cancer.
Yeah. So there you go.
Also, I've been playing Haven, City of Violence, with my dad and stepfamily and little sister for a couple months now. Cool.
Wow.
I can't believe... Is that our fault? Did we do that to you?
I'm so sorry.
I am the GM, and we are playing a mob-type game without gravity because my dyslexic stepsister played a scientist and rolled a 1 to mess up everything. Nice. What are some interesting adventures to run through for this game, in your opinion? How long are you going to be able to keep this going? Without gravity, there's nothing keeping the rotation of the Earth from flinging you into space. All the atmosphere will have been stripped off the planet by now, and everyone will have died and flown into the sky.
Well, yeah, but this is just weird sci-fi, so it's anti-grav.
So instead, everyone's just floating, is what it is. Okay, so it's a world where you're playing as floating mobsters?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, you need to heist a bunch of blimps.
Obviously. Yeah. Now, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to get some illegal booze that you want to get places.
So what you're going to need to do is blimp leg that booze without gravity. Although that actually kind of ruins blimp leggers, because one of the big threats of blimp leggers is falling off the blimp.
Well, yeah, but now it's flying into the sky.
Vanishing into the sky. All these blimps are upside down. They're full of helium, the only element that still has gravity, so it tries to get back to Earth.
No, it's just one of those heavier-than-air...
heavier-than-air vehicles that you have to use to keep your mob operation going.
Yeah.
So it's Blimpleggers upside down is what this game is.
Yes.
All right.
It is like you were playing in Australia, where everything is upside down.
And a criminal.
And trying to kill you.
And a poisonous criminal. All right. Oh, my gosh. Well, that sounds like a fun game. He says, I may be 14, but I have gone through the Crucible of Palladium and came out with a crazed look and wild ideas of hypnotizing dragons with a mega juicer tied to his tail. Yeah, I did that too.
Yeah.
Although I had to wait until I was like 17 for that book to come out with the mega juicers.
Oh, the mega juicers.
So there you go. That's the only real difference. However, this system is really hard to teach new people. My question is, what's a better system to run it in? Dr. Magnahands or some inferior game? And he's talking about Rifts in this situation. Well, shit, probably Savage Worlds, right? I mean, that's supposed to be happening.
Well.
We'll see. We run Rifts when we run Rifts, which is not often these days. But when we have done it in the past, we ran it in fucking rewritten White Wolf.
Oh, yeah. We had some D10-based rules for that.
Because we have some friends who are crazy geniuses who thought that would be rad, and it was. Although trying to sell it to anyone else is not easy.
Oh, no. Well, this is definitely one of those games that if we took and we're like, and now we'll publish it, it would be a game we would look at on this show and go, oh, my God, it's another example of people writing for the writer instead of the player.
Whoops. Although we playtested the shit out of that. We played so much Rifts with those crazy rules.
Oh, yeah. But again, it's a group that has been using those rules.
Yeah, it's true. So we don't recommend using our friend's D10 adaptation of Rifts, but it is awesome.
Instead, it is great.
Yeah. Fates, what's that? Apocalypse World does really good for that. Yeah. Savage Worlds will win it when it eventually gets made.
Look, just get yourself a good copy of GURPS Rifts.
Get yourself a copy of Manhunter and play Manhunter Rifts instead of Rifts Manhunter, the supplement.
Yeah, so what you're going to get is you're going to get Traveler, and you're going to procedurally create different dimensions to go to.
Nice. All right. Okay, I recently found a game called Violence, the game of repulsive and egregious violence. It's a parody of Haven City of Violence and is absolutely hilarious to read, not to play. Wow, someone actually made a parody of Haven? That's
Violence,
cool.
City of Havens.
There's some really good ideas in it, like getting a +1 to any attribute for each dollar you mail to the writer's address.
Lol.
I like that idea. We should do that with this show somehow. How can we further monetize our lives? All right, moving on. Thank you, Rory. Hello, Messieurs J&J. I, Bush-era liberal filmmaker Michael Moore, want to ask you some questions to help understand who you truly are as people. Oh, hang on, wait a minute. Before we get to him, there's one last thing from Rory I didn't see. He has made his own podcast he wanted us to know about called Crit One. So if you want to find one of our listeners' podcasts called Crit One, you can do that on iTunes. It looks like it's friends. They get together and talk about games and how to play different RPGs. Cool. That's what we do. That's fun. Get out there. We love it when people make these. What do we got here? I'd appreciate it if you write us a review or perhaps like to be on an episode or something. Oh, well, that's nice. Well, we'll consider it after I give it a listen. What is your advice for being a successful but bad RPG podcast? I don't know,
because we're good.
We're good RPG podcasts. So, sorry, man.
I guess my advice for you is keep being you if you want to be bad.
Yeah.
Oh!
Suck it, 14-year-old following in our footsteps. Terrible role models.
Woo!
No, honestly, just keep going with it, because our first couple episodes are garbage.
Oh, yeah, it's true. I went back and listened to, like, our second episode and went, ooh, no.
Yeah, it's funny, because one of my favorite books we've ever read is that Prime Directive shit, but we're so angry at it that it just...
It's too angry to be able to review.
Yeah.
It's so, just us being belligerent.
Just being mean. We finally found the balance and started laughing a little bit eventually, which is important. That's part of how you make a good podcast.
We've gone a little insane.
Yep, there you go. So, thanks so much for letting us know. All right, back to Michael Moore. Questions from Michael Moore. Which one of you is Avatar, and which one of you is Black Wolf? Oh, man, I want to be Black Wolf. Avatar fucking sucks.
I'm pretty sure I'm Avatar and you're Black Wolf, so that's fine.
That makes more sense, right?
I'm a lazy dumpus, and I get other people to do things for me, and I'm just kind of an asshole.
See,
and you're a Nazi, so it all basically works out.
It's funny, I don't mind being a Nazi as much as I want to deny you getting to have rad sex with fat fairies. I don't want you to have that, because you're a little shitty beard and shoes, and all you really deserve is to like watch porno on Skinamax on Thursday nights.
instead of
getting Eleanor.
But yeah, that's 100% accurate.
Yeah, right? That's what you get. Whereas I am way too much beard, bones instead of arms. Yeah, it's pretty much accurate. Yeah. That's something I don't usually talk about on the show, how I have bones instead of forearms.
But he does.
Yeah, it's just a thing with me. Also, constantly watching Nazi stuff.
Constantly.
Yeah, no. Not true.
Not even the propaganda, just pictures.
The difference is that I am significantly more hateful than John.
Yeah, that's true.
So I am definitely the black wolf of the two of us.
Uh-huh.
I'm all right with that. All right, great. Mostly because of how crappy Avatar is. I'll pass on being the main character if it's him.
All right. Man. Avatar's great. He has powers and he doesn't use it for anything useful.
Yeah. What would you personally consider to be the antithesis of Wheel?
Of Wheel?
Wheel. W-E-A-L. So it's not like, squares?
Yeah, I was like, I don't know, rectangle? A box?
Useless box that you can't use to roll on? But no, it's supposed to be, I think the answer is supposed to be, you know, whoa. Because that's the opposite of Wheel.
Oh.
But the antithesis of Wheel is, what's the least fun thing?
What is the least fun thing?
Yeah, basically. Wheel is good times. It's celebrations and happiness and good fortune. It's an old-fashioned word.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's in Christmas carols.
Yeah.
So, you know that. So what's the opposite?
I guess being real hot and sweaty, but you gotta wear a coat because you're at work.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's the worst.
How about when you've had to be like running around and you're wearing like a coat or like a work shirt or something, and then right after running around a whole bunch, you have to sit down in a meeting room and you know you're about to sweat up. You're like, everyone's gonna watch you. Just you watch your shirt get darker. And
everyone here is just gonna see me have flop sweat drip onto the table.
Yeah, and just like ew. And you're just like, God damn it, I hate this. That might be pretty, that's pretty bad, yeah.
I mean, that's mostly you, though, because you're a big sweaty man.
But even then, that's not my answer. My answer is when I go to a party and it's a bunch of weed people sitting around talking about weed.
Oh, yeah.
That's the least fun. Not even when they're having fun weed opinions, and you're like, what if the world was just a neutron in a giant atom? I'm like, whatever,
I'm down with high thoughts.
Yeah.
But it's when people that are either high or drunk are just like, oh, man, you know what's great is when you get drunk and then you're drunk. Oh, dude, I used to drink and then I gave it up, but now, you know, drinking. And you're like, okay, great.
Right, yeah, thank you for your thought on the thing you do. That's the least fun. That is the antithesis of Wheel for me. All right, next question, also from Michael Moore. Oh, I know this. You're in a desert, walking along in the sand, when all of a sudden you look down and you see a tortoise crawling towards you. You reach down and you flip the tortoise over onto its back. The tortoise lays on its back, its belly baking in the hot sun, beating its legs, trying to turn itself over. But it can't. Not without your help. But you're not helping. Why is that?
It knows what it did.
Fuck tortoises. Because I'm hungry, but I don't have any other good way to kill the tortoise.
Because I want it to get cooked first.
Yeah, I want tortoise meat. Fresh.
What I want is fresh tortoise meat, cooked to a crisp, Kraft American single.
Are we replicants? I think that's actually the question being asked here, right? I can't watch Blade Runner. It's just too boring.
It's true. I've always felt, until like fairly recently, that I was a bad person for not liking Blade Runner.
Yeah.
That every time I tried to sit down and watch it, I just went, oh, I don't care. I'm watching something else.
Yeah.
But now I don't care anymore.
You've owned it.
Yeah, I've owned up to the fact that I don't care about Blade Runner, so whatever.
So my answer to this is because the reason I'm not helping the turtle is because I'm taking tentative steps backwards, because I'm going to get a running start when I see how far I can kick that turtle. I mean, I want that thing going to the horizon. turtle kicking.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael Moore. All right, here we go. Questions for Afterthought, and these are coming to us from... Ooh, shoot, I'm sorry, I forgot to put down your name. So, whatever. You know who you are. Questions for Afterthought. Board games. You play them. Have either of you played Twilight Imperium? If yes, favorite and least favorite things. If no, would you play it? I have not, and I probably would. John has it in his car.
Yep. I have played it. It is rad as fuck. And I have won every single time that I have played it.
Yeah. I'd probably play it and just... I know I'd be spending a lot of time on my phone, but otherwise I'm sure I'd play it.
Oh, yeah. Well, the big thing with that is... there are just constant rounds, because each turn is like seven different rounds that you go through.
Oh, jeez.
And there's like, okay, now someone's going to do the diplomacy phase, and someone's going to do the engineering phase, and someone's going to do the trading phase. And you're like, okay, here we go, every single time. But I think it's great. I would play the shit out of it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah. All right. Fair, me too. I would totally play it, although I've not played it yet. And next couple questions from this fellow are things that we've done before, so I'm just going to zip right through them. You ready?
Here we go.
One-word answers. Here we go. How do you guys feel about very rules-light, narrative-heavy games like Dungeon World, Fader, etc.? Have you had any notably good, bad experiences with them?
They're good.
They're great. We love them. We've done that before, I'm pretty sure. Video games don't get mentioned much on the show. What are your favorite video games? Why is the other host wrong? Okay, I can do this one. John's wrong because slow, boring world control simulator games like Crusader Kings and XCOM and stuff bore the shit out of me, and I don't care about them.
And Jeff is wrong because he always is.
It's because fighting games aren't your bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what I play. Is
also, the best video game is Chrono Trigger.
The best video game is Chrono Trigger. That is good. True. And we agree.
We are agreed.
Agreed. All right, perfect. Moving on. What video games? Oh, we just did that. What cons have you guys been to?
Comic.
We have both been to Comic Con several times because we live in San Diego.
Also, Yaoi. I have been to Yaoi Con.
I've been to several anime conventions because I have a friend who runs an anime store and I help her run her booth.
There you go.
So I've been. I couldn't even tell you. They're called things like Hanadoki Con and Sakura Con and stuff. I always feel like the odd man out because I do not know from anime.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just sitting there like, wow.
I went to Anime Expo, and again, running around there, everyone's like, oh, that person's dressed as whoever. And I'm like, I don't fucking know. Unless you are dressed as, like, Goku or Naruto, I'm not going to know who the fuck you are.
The thing that gets me with anime is the names are always so long. And they're always like, that guy's dressed as Princess Sailor 7 from the and it's just like five more words in the name. You're like, what is this? What? How does that happen? That'd be like if Daredevil was called, like, Fantastic Devil Man 17.
Yeah, let's see, what else have I been to? Oh, and I went to Kubla Khan once, which we are going to.
Yes, we are. Oh, I didn't know you'd been there
before.
Yeah,
I've been there once.
Oh, that's cool.
Anyway, I mean, I didn't really go to the convention as much as hang around.
Near it, okay. I also have been to a couple conventions that were not gaming-related in any way. I went to the AVN conference in Vegas once, which is the adult video.
Oh, yeah. I was in Vegas when it was happening. I just didn't do anything with it.
It was just fun to go to. It was just,
I almost met Elton John, actually,
there you go.
During that.
Yeah. But John mentioned it. We are going to be at Kubla Khan this May, Memorial Day weekend. Kubla Khan is a San Francisco-based convention. It's role-playing games. We're going to try and run a table and run a couple of games for people who are interested. We're still looking at doing that. If we're not out of time already, we might be.
It's possible.
Anyway, but we will be there. That'll be our first official convention attending as System Mastery. We'll have business cards and our t-shirts on and everything.
Swag for anyone who finds us.
Yeah.
Cobbler for anyone who finds us.
Oh, no, not yet. You have to hit like a crazy amount on the Patreon before we'll start carrying around Cobbler.
I'm going to carry around Cobbler anyway. It's what I do.
Yeah, but it won't be for people who find you.
they'll find me and be like, can I get that Cobbler? And be like, get the fuck away from me. This is my Cobbler.
Serious? Are you seriously asking me for my Cobbler?
I am sorry, sir.
Yeah. But no, we're actually going to be at Kubla Khan. So if you'd like to meet System Mastery, that'll be the one to go to. If we can't run a table, then we'll do a drinking night one night. We'll meet at a nearby bar or something, and we'll hang out there. So
Make mistakes.
Do horrible things.
Eldritch things.
Don't bring your sisters. All right. So there you go. That's a big announcement. That's the Memorial Day weekend this year in San Francisco. Come meet us.
Do it.
All right. And finally, what are the go-to impressive meals you make for other people?
Well,
John makes pancakes.
I can make a mean panned cake.
Which, unfortunately,
I can call a mean delivery service.
Yeah. He can only do morning food, which means he pretty much has to score before he goes for the impression. Where my usual go-to if I'm looking to impress someone is a rosemary crusted pork tenderloin.
Mm-hmm.
I've made it for John once or twice. You like that thing, right? So the trick to this is you get a nice pork tenderloin, and what you want to do is take a very, very sharp knife and sliver garlic, get like garlic cloves and cut them into slivers. Then you're going to take that same sharp knife and use it to poke holes right into the pork tenderloin all over, just stud it. And in each one of those holes, put a sliver of the garlic. Then you're going to mix up a rub of salt, pepper, rosemary, thyme, and oregano. You don't actually, or no, not oregano, it's rosemary.
Sage.
Yeah, it's sage. Thank you. It's sage, but not parsley. You don't need that. So it's not the Paul Simon song. And sage. So you're going to mix all those up, chop them up real fine, put some olive oil in with the salt, pepper, and those three spices, and then you're going to take your pork tenderloin and just rub it all over with that spice blend, and the olive oil is going to make it stick. Then you bake that at, it's been a while since I've done this, but 400 for about 45 minutes to an hour. Make sure you use a meat thermometer to check for 135 at the center of the meat, and then serve it, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's great. My go-to.
Also, I make a mean banana cream pie.
Nice. I did not know that.
I do. Yeah. It's just you've never had it.
Oh, well, let's put that on the list.
Yeah.
Get me some of that banana cream pie.
That's so good.
I love banana cream pie. All right. Okay, let's move on. We got to keep going. Let's push. This is a special thank you for you, John. Oh, you know what? It's Alex from Texas. I'm sorry. Thank you for all those questions, Alex from Texas. I just saw your name. Dear Jeff and John, but mostly John, because he cured my transphobia.
Woo!
All right. So I took John's mocking advice and sat down to watch a shit ton of gay porn.
Good.
It didn't work to cure my homophobia, probably because, as Jeff pointed out, dudes are gross. Yeah.
It's true.
I like them, but they're gross. And they're even grosser when they get down to fuckifying. However, I tried it with porn featuring trans women. And the damnedest thing happened, it worked. After watching trans women screw for an hour or so, they no longer weird me out, mostly because I'm well acquainted with what they might have under the hood, and I'm no longer picturing fanciful transphobic bullshit. I'm not saying John should get a Nobel Prize or anything, but damned if his joke making the homophobe watch gay porn approach didn't make me feel less prejudiced. I earned my fellow sufferers from transphobia to watch as much trans porn as possible and feel that this should be known as the John Mastery Method forevermore.
No, it actually is true. When I was saying I studied a lot of psychology, I did, mm-hmm. and immersion therapy is an actual thing.
I think we should name it that. I don't think we should call it the John Mastery, though. I think we'll call it the Dudovico technique.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, good. Okay, moving on. Anyway, here's a question for you. What's the objectively correct way to serve eggs? I think it's as part of huevos rancheros, but I am open to being convinced. Thanks, the great ghoul. P.S. Do they even have huevos rancheros in whatever godforsaken state you guys live in?
California.
We're in California. We're the only state that has better Mexican food than you, Texan. Your Mexican food has been tainted with fucking cornmeal and chili powder.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You've got that Tex-Mex, and as soon as you put the Tex in there, everything gets worse.
Yeah, it just gets heavier and thicker. We're in San Diego. We're not only in the best part of the country to get Mexican food, but also the best city in that state. So yeah, we have really good huevos rancheros. Although I don't like eggs, so I don't even know. I just assume they're the best, John.
Oh yeah. So I love a good huevos rancheros. I'll be honest, that shit is delicious.
Yeah.
The other thing that I really like with eggs is on top of some corned beef hash, you get those over medium for me is mm-hmm. the way I like it. You get that on top of some corned beef hash. That is delicious. That's how you want your eggs.
Yeah.
But if I'm just having eggs by themselves, I want them scrambled. Because there's less work involved.
Yeah, fair
Most
enough.
Of the other ways you get eggs, you have to have something to, like, sop up your shenanigans or do something with. Scrambled, you can just eat.
Right. And I think this guy might be from New Mexico, and I was confusing him with our previous question answer, whose name was Alex from Texas.
Yeah.
So he's from some Midwestern state that has good Mexican food. There are several. There is good Mexican food out there. It isn't San Diego Mexican food. Let's start some beef, right?
Yeah. Anyone who's not from San Diego, your Mexican food is garbage. Unless you're from Mexico, and then it's probably fine.
It's just fine. Although, I'd say that San Diego still has better Mexican food than the Mexican places that I have been to. Because the fish tacos from right around here. We're the Baja California sector, so we get the best Mexican food ever created, the amazing fish taco.
Yeah.
All right. PPS, does John actually know what Lotaburger is?
Whataburger, you mean?
No, he thinks you said Lotaburger, which is a New Mexico chain restaurant.
Oh, no.
You said Whataburger, which is an L.A. thing.
No. Whataburger is a Eastern Southern thing.
Yeah, yeah. If so, why is he familiar with a fast food chain that aggressively only exists in New Mexico? And he's not. He was saying Whataburger.
No, it's the same thing. Like, there are a few restaurants that are called Lenny's instead of Denny's that are just trying to play off of that name.
Yeah.
And Whataburger is basically them just trying to play off of Whataburger.
But we have a lot of familiarity with restaurants that don't exist in San Diego just because of aggressive commercials and because we're the kind of weirdos who would do that.
Oh, yeah. So, I know all about Hardee's and Checkers and
Friendly's. Getting on down to the Piggly Wiggly.
Go to my Waffle House.
Yeah. So we know. We're up to speed.
We get it.
Yep. All right. Thanks so much, the great ghoul. And good luck not being transphobic in the future. All right. Next question comes to us from Ted Cheddar.
Good.
Ted Cheddar asks, although you often refer to yourselves as a podcast, recently I realized that you lack essential elements of the medium. Despite broadcasting for over 2 years, I have not yet heard anything about the implausibility of Home Alone 2 or ghost jacking off. These are mandatory elements of any comedy podcast, so when will we, the audience, hear your views on the subject? All right, so Home Alone 2.
One time I saw a ghost jack off on Home Alone 2 DVD. Done.
Moving on. I would say the most implausible thing about Home Alone 2 is that Donald Trump would not be nice to a little kid he found in a lobby.
Oh, that's 100% accurate.
Yeah, he'd probably have his goons beat him up. So that was a highly implausible moment in that film.
Also, it's really implausible that Tim Curry would be working at a hotel. He's an actor.
I know. That doesn't seem right at all. He should be off acting somewhere, not working in a hotel trying to catch a little kid.
Yeah.
That's just unusual.
That's strange.
Also, one of Kevin McAllister's uncles apparently owns a suburban house in the middle of central Manhattan.
Yeah, that's crazy,
little,
right?
That's a little, it's just a two-story, like a very nice two-story home in the middle of central Manhattan. That was an unusual moment.
Yes.
So, all right. And then ghosts jacking off. Do you have any material here?
No, I got about as much material as they do. Hey,
oh,
they're
material. All that. They just have ectoplasm come flying out of them.
Yeah.
I feel like Slimer's mostly jacking off every time you see him. It's just that his whole thing is stuffing food in his face. So for him, that is masturbation.
Oh, yeah. That's his fetish.
That's my fetish. Eating 50 hot dogs at once.
Oh, yeah.
I'm Slimer the ghost. Also, I'm the worst ghost.
The worst ghost.
I am the Judas of ghosts.
Oh, Slimer the Judas ghost.
It's true.
Yeah, man. You watch that Extreme Ghostbusters?
Oh. Yeah. All he does is trap other ghosts, and then he gets to not be trapped.
Oh, yeah. He is definitely the house ghost.
Yeah. No, he is. He is the Judas ghost. Just like the famous phrase, or not the not famous, the extremely obscure phrase, Judas goat. Which I do not know why I know, but it's the goat they used to lead animals into slaughterhouses.
Yeah.
You know it too? That's good. All right. All right. Next question comes to us from Roderick Dunwald, the Cheese Dudes Regional Director of San Diego, California.
Oh, good. I haven't heard from him.
It's weird that we haven't met him, seeing as how we are also in San Diego and are the lead advertisers. I feel like we had to perform at their most recent corporate event.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's just apocryphal, but I've heard no one ever actually sees him. He mostly stays in the shadow.
I've heard he can't have an orgasm unless he kills a dog.
Well, that's not apocryphal. I know that.
that's been published in well-regarded journals of opinion.
Obviously.
All right. The X-Men are going to rob a bank, and they have turned to you to put together the crew. Who was handling the vault? Who was on crowd control? Who was the lookout? And who was the getaway driver?
Easiest thing ever. Yeah. Okay, Kitty Pryde takes care of the vault. She can go through it. No one cares.
Yeah.
Crowd control, Professor X. He just makes the crowd quiet. No one cares. No one hits a button.
All hold still, yeah.
Great. The driver is going to be...
Forge.
Forge. Forge can make his own car.
Yeah, Forge has a supercar, so we're good to go there.
And then the lookout is going to be Angel, because he can fly.
He can fly. That's fair. I feel like there's probably other lookouts you could have gone with. You could just use Professor X for both.
Oh, yeah. It's Professor X does everything. Who cares?
There are 140 people here. That one is thinking about cheese.
Oh.
That one likes my bum. Ooh, he's Randy. No, that's also his name. I'm not saying he's horny, though he is.
Now he is.
Lieutenant Commander Data.
All right.
So that's good. That is very easy.
Yeah. Or you just make the driver Nightcrawler so everyone gets into the car and then he bamps the car forward.
That'd be fine, sure.
So you get around roadblocks very easily.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to have to drive a van that Professor X can get back into, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're planning a bank heist with a wheelchair guy.
Well, that's why he can be the driver, because he can just bamf out, grab Professor X, bamf him back into the van.
All right. Hello again, Jonf. Okay, so he's combining our names into our celebrity couple name, Jonf.
Which is better than, because if you switch it the other way, it's just Jen.
Yeah, Jen isn't really. And then we end up being part of, like, Brangelina or something like that.
Jen in the holograms.
I don't want that. Nope. Or Jen and Kira, the lead characters from Dark Crystal. Wow, that's just falling apart. Moving on. Your last attempt at my accent was just horrifying. Thank you. I won't ask you to do it again. If you want to know how it should sound, try listening to our pop sensation, The Wurzels. If you can get away with playing a clip on your show, I'd highly recommend their cover of the Kaiser Chiefs' hit song, Ruby. Do you think we should cut to a clip?
Let's cut to a clip.
I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Henry the Eighth, I am, I am. I got married to the widow next door. She's been married 7 times before. Henry. She wouldn't have a Willie or a Sam.
No, sir.
I'm her eighth old man, I'm Henry. Henry the eighth I am.
No, okay, alright, that was a great clip. Good clip.
Yeah.
Alright. I have just finished listening to your review of Food Fight over on Movie Mastery. As possibly your only English listener, that's actually not true. We have like hundreds of English listeners we can track that we know of.
That we contracted like a disease.
Gluttons for punishment, all of them. I will officially apologize on behalf of my nation for allowing Food Fight to be released in this country, if you will in turn apologize for your nation having created that garbage in the first place.
Yeah, that's fair.
We're sorry on behalf of the Firefighters Insurance Fund or whatever it was that
Mostly, I'm just going to apologize on behalf of Charlie Sheen existing.
Yeah, that's our fault. Our fault. He might be Canadian. Can we blame him on Canada?
There are so many people you can blame on Canada, but I don't know if Sheen is one of them.
I don't know. We're going to dump him on Canada anyway.
We're just dumping him on Canada's doorstep in a bassinet. With a little note.
Diaper pinned to his chest. I'm Charlie Sheen. Please take care of me.
Please give him the opportunities that we could not.
How many hookers can you get in a bottle? All right. As I'm not some upper crust noble born into power and money, I have never made a hobby of getting together with my chums and torturing helpless lesser creatures for fun. That's a weird way to discuss what they did to India.
Oh! Oh, ouch.
Wow. Zing. Racism. I've also never been fox hunting. Oh, shit. He was doing the same joke I was.
Oh.
Sorry. I did. Anyway, therefore, I cannot apologize for it. By the way, he's spelling apologize with an S. British.
Weird.
All right. Then again, if I was going to start apologizing for every bad thing the British had done, I'd have a full-time job for life. I feel like there's probably a couple British people who do have that job, right?
Oh, probably.
There's probably some guy in one of those like long pipe cleaner looking hats whose job is just to stand there with a megaphone and be like, "The British officially apologize for making a bunch of math teachers into our famous celebrities."
Yeah. No, he's just sitting there with a stamp that says, "I'm sorry." And there's just a bunch of papers that go by.
Oh, yeah. And we've hit the point where they have to bring him stuff at the moment. And he's like, "The British officially apologize for Ricky Gervais." Stamp. Once a week he has to do historical apologies, but otherwise it's just celebrities that suck.
Oh yeah, it's mostly just a bunch of weird winners of Britain's Got Talent.
Yeah.
And every week he has to say, "I'm sorry for Britain's Got Talent.
Sorry once again.
Britain's Got Talent is still on the air. So sorry."
Yeah. I cannot apologize for fox hunting, blah, blah, blah. Pretty sure our part in creating the USA would be in there somewhere, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you should probably apologize for the creation of the USA. That's perfectly fair.
Yeah.
Not us, though. We didn't do it.
No.
That was the British.
Yeah. Fucking British.
Since being British, I am a glutton for punishment. I listen to your show, don't I? I must ask that you make a micro review of my great nation and each present your most favorite and least favorite things about the United Kingdom. Thanks, Tom.
Okay.
What's your favorite thing about England?
My favorite thing about England is the review show Shut Up and Sit Down that reviews board games, and they're British. Good for them.
My favorite thing about Britain is Indian food.
Lol.
No credit whatsoever. No, I actually do really like British food. I'll be honest. It's famous for being bland, but most of it is not bland. It's just heavy and delicious.
Yeah, just like me.
So British food is my favorite thing. What's your least favorite thing about Britain?
Margaret Thatcher. I don't know. That's just me pandering to the Brits, actually. I shouldn't say that.
No, be mean to them. What's your least favorite thing about Britain?
Let's see. How can I piss off all of the British people? Let's just say the BBC is my least favorite thing. Doctor Who. Let's piss off the Americans,
too.
There
you go.
Let's piss off everyone who listens to us.
All right. I'm going to say, I also want to piss off all our listeners, so I'm going to say something I don't actually mean. Stephen Fry. He's a big, lumpy piece of shit. No one likes him.
Fuck Stephen Fry and Doctor Who. There you go. We no longer have listeners.
I love Stephen Fry.
And I love Doctor Who.
I feel bad for saying that. Oh, all right. P.S. You just complained about winged humanoids flying aircraft all day in your latest System Mastery, asking why they bother when they can already fly. But have you guys never driven a car before? Look, first of all, that was John. I actually was on board with people who can fly should be better pilots. I was completely on board with that. But the real thing is, why are they better at being pilots was the question, I think, and not why are they constantly flying airplanes?
Also, if I were a person that had wheels for feet and could zoom around on wheels, yes, that would be weird for me to then get into a car.
You're right. If you were Turbo Teen.
Yeah. If I turned into a car and drove around, me then getting into a car to get around would be weird.
Or a fetish.
Yeah, well,
if you were like
that
a car,
is my fetish.
If you were a car in human form, then getting into another car would be like, oh man, this is some inner space hot shit.
Ooh, it's like Carvore.
Wow. All right, next question. Oh boy, we are way over. How much do we got left? We have so much left.
We
all
have
right.
10 pages left.
You know what? That's it for this week, isn't it?
Yep, I think that's about all we can get to. We're going to end it on Carvore.
Carvore, that's where we go out. All right, so thanks so much for listening.
Be sure to stay tuned to our new Transformer character, Carvor.
I love their cakes. Fudgy the all-consuming whale.
All right,
so there you go. Thanks so much for listening to the Afterthought Podcast. As always, if you want to catch us on System Mastery, there'll be another one of those next week. You can find us on SystemMasteryPodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, email us on Gmail. We're all System Mastery at every one of those locations. You can support us on Patreon if you like what we do. It's System Mastery there, too. What do you know?
Hey, what do you know?
Once again, a reminder that coming soon will be us at a convention in May. If you want to meet System Mastery, if you want to have a good time at a role-playing game convention and play some role-playing games, get your ass to KublaCon.
Get your ass to KublaCon.
Yeah, I'm not really plugging them all that well. They have a website. You can find it. It's easy. So go find them. And find us at KublaCon. And once again, thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful week.
Go!
What you doing to me?